we need to have plastic recycling at the community level. Whatever plastic a community generates, you know, a small town, a village, any other manufacturing site, they should be able to recycle that plastic locally and recycle that plastic into a product that generates some commercial value.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands which are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. During my recent visit to India, I came across several creative, mindful brands, and we feature some of those brands in our next few episodes. We recorded the episodes in the vibrant city of Mumbai. Today, we have with us an extremely innovative company, makers of Recron panels, giving value to waste plastic. Joining us is the co-founder and director, Rahul Chaudhary. Welcome, Rahul.
Thank you, Vidya. It's an honor.
How household recyclables are picked up varies from country to country. For instance, in the US, the government agencies and private agencies which pick up sorted and single-stream plastics, and people are even willing to pay the private companies or pay a premium in their tax for the recycles to be picked up. Can you explain how household recycling works and happens in India?
Yeah, so to break down, there are three steps. One is collection, then there is segregation, and then recycling. In America, mostly, the municipalities or the authorities, they collect almost all of the plastic from households. Then they're taken to a land site where they're segregated and then recycled. In other countries like India, segregation usually happens early on. So there are rag pickers or, you know, small scrap traders who would buy this household scrap. And then they would go directly to these private recyclers. A lot of segregation does not happen when the plastic waste is collected by the municipalities. So there's a lot of wet waste. There's a lot of foreign materials. There could be glass, metal, you know, paper. So basically, it's all mixed up. So there's the lack of segregation makes it difficult for more better recycling avenues.
So the waste collected from the municipality, that is not segregated.
Yes.
So that complicates or increases the waste because you cannot use soiled waste.
If you tackle segregation early on, the efficiency improves drastically. If it's all mixed up and if it reaches to a common site and if the stockpile is in thousands of tons, then, you know, it requires a lot of infrastructure to sort of get through that process.
So what role do the rag pickers play in the whole recycling process?
Yes. If you look at plastic waste, there's a number of polymer types. You've got your PET, you've got your LDPE, you've got PVC, PP, BOPP, so on. So every plastic type serves a different purpose. For example, PET is used in, you know, your Coca-Cola bottles or so on. These rag pickers, they're very selective in terms of what they're picking. PET bottles are recycled easily, or PE items are recycled easily. So they're very selective. They don't collect everything. And they're sold at a certain rate in the market where they recycle and then there's further value addition and then they're sold to the markets. But the percentage composition of these so-called usable plastics, which the rag pickers pick, is very limited. A bulk 80% or 85% of the plastic still goes to the landfill. So either it goes to the landfill or it is uncollected and it goes to the environment directly. A global study by National Geographic says that almost 80% of the plastic goes to the environment. So as of today, there's around 5 billion tons of plastic in the environment. So it's in the oceans, it's in the forest, the open land, or whatever has been burned is going to the atmosphere. So what is uncollected is a very overwhelming figure.
So India has banned the use of plastic bags, especially if they are below 50 microns. And I see a change in people's attitude. I came about 10 months ago, and within the 10 months, I see that people are using paper or wax paper, and almost nobody gives you a plastic shopping bag. This is just the tip of the iceberg. How much waste is generated in India?
Broadly speaking, an average Indian produces around 10 to 12 kgs of plastic every year. But India is a big country, so that's billions of tons of plastic. What is more important is how much of that plastic is being put to good use or recycled properly. You mentioned about, you know, the ban on single-use plastics. I think it's a great drive, although the composition percentage might be very low, but it's a very great approach to, you know, educating people about their consumer habits. And I hope over a generation there'll be that change where people will be more conservative about dealing with plastics. So I think it's a great initiative.
So what waste do you use to make your products?
We were talking earlier about, you know, different plastic types. So one category of plastic types is called the multi-layer plastic. Multi-layer plastic is, you know, typically your packaging plastic where there are multiple polymer types in a single layer. You know, there could be, you know, PET, PP, even aluminium, even paper. You know, imagine a Tetra Pak or imagine a toothpaste tube. So there are different layers of materials. So these kind of materials cannot be recycled in a single process. And almost all of this plastic cannot be recycled very easily. So it either goes to the landfill, is incinerated, or just lies in the environment. We have an in-house proprietary process wherein we collect these plastic types, multi-layer, different types of plastic types, all multi-layer, and then we recycle them into these boards or panels or sheets, whatever you may call it. And what we have achieved so far is a product that can effectively substitute the use of building materials such as plywood, MDF, you know, cement sheets, PVC sheets, you know, a lot of the conventionally used building material types.
So you also use pharmaceutical blister packs. What exactly are they and why do they use the blister packs to keep tablets in India and many other countries?
Well, whatever medicine that's packed inside needs to be prevented from moisture. So that is why there is more than one plastic types. There's an aluminium foil on top of it, basically to add shelf life. And the same concept applies for your food packaging or your cosmetics and so on. So wherever you want to protect your you know, materials from moisture or air or any bacteria or whatever, that's the basic concept behind packaging.
How do you go and collect the blister packs? Are they sorted after the trash is collected, or you go to hospitals and collect the blister packs, or where do you get them? Because this is such a niche thing, right? 3-inch by a 2-inch pad.
So we don't go out hunting for blister packs. We collect all the plastic types, okay? And we don't spend too much time in, you know, segregating. That's where the cost is low. And at the same time, we have a technique. You could utilize all the plastic types, you know, so you're agnostic towards the kind of plastic, but at the same time achieving a product which will generate some commercial value. Whatever raw material that we buy or we procure or we, you know,
collect,
that could be anything. It could be, you know, multi-layer plastic, packaging from cosmetics, pharmaceuticals, other FMCG. It could be, you know, other single polymer types, your PET bottles or your PP, you know, packets or whatever. So the idea is we're agnostic and we have a process that recycles everything into a product that serves some purpose.
So talk about the process and the technique. How are you able to be agnostic to the kind of plastic?
The process, if, you know, broadly speaking, can be broken down into two parts. One is the final batch of raw material that we prepare, and then the technique we use to process it into a finished good. So the process, the product conversion from raw material to finished goods is fairly simple. It's proprietary. But I'll come to the first part, which is how you process the raw material and why it's a challenge. Now, when you collect all these plastic types, you know, you have different polymers. Every polymer will have a different melting point, will have a different strength associated to it, you know, in terms of the final product. And so these quantities varies, these types varies. So you really have to have a controlled batch of raw material. And you need to know how much of what can go in that batch to achieve that final product. This is where all our effort goes in. And depending on what we're getting, we sort of control the inputs. And then we process that raw material batch, which is plastic waste. Of course, it's clean and, you know, it's decontaminated and, you know, so on. And then whatever we achieve, we get a range of products. And the other idea is to understand whatever product we're making as a final product, where can it be used? If I supply my product to you for, you know, kitchen furniture, for example. It has to be durable kitchen furniture. So a lot of effort goes in that, that every single piece that I supply matches that quality and, you know, strength expectation.
How do you clean the raw materials?
It's a fairly simple process. We use washing line pretty much. And a lot of plastic that we buy come from industries. So this is all pre-use plastic, which does not have a lot of contamination. So it's fairly clean. So cleaning process is fairly, you know, simple. A lot of companies already do that, which are recycling the conventional plastic types like PET and all.
So you said you make different products. You showed me some panels which could be used to make containers, some roof tiles. Your recycled product, does it perform the same way as the traditional product? In terms of, like, I'm thinking of a plastic roof, it's going to heat up.
Yeah, so talking about application, there are multiple ways of using the product. For example, let's assume a house. We could build an entire house using our product. Could do the walls, partitions, you could do the doors, you know, all kinds of furniture inside the house, you know, beds, wardrobes, benches, and you could do kitchen cabinets, you could do the flooring, you could do the roofing. So basically, we've delivered projects where the entire housing has been made from this kind of plastic. So the possibilities of substituting conventional products is there. Talking about the quality. Now, if you look at timber or plywood, for instance, the biggest challenge is water absorption. The more water it absorbs over time, you know, the decay starts to happen. And the fact that it's an organic material, it is prone to termites and bacteria and fungus and so on. Because our product is fully made of plastic, solid plastic, water absorption is very, very low. It's close to 0%. Then it's inorganic product. So there is no impact of bacteria or fungus or termites. So it's got a longer life. Speaking in terms of mechanical strength, the density is higher. Certain other physical properties, such as the compressive strength or the bending strength, is much higher too. So it tends to deliver a longer life when being used in these applications. So these are some of the commercial applications that we supply for. There are a lot of other industrial applications. You know, plywood is being consumed in civil construction at a massive scale. So we supply our product for shuttering also. You know, concrete shuttering they do. Then we supply to a lot of these brick and block manufacturing companies. So they consume a lot of plywood in the process of manufacturing bricks and block. So that is another application. We supply to a lot of chemical industries where they want to use flooring or paneling because chemicals and acids eat up concrete or, you know, harm the infrastructure. So our product is resistant to chemicals and acids. So that again becomes a very good source of application for us.
So you showed me some of the panels and I liked one. I would like a countertop, you know, made with that look. It just looks very nice. How durable would it be?
Yes. So if you're talking about functional kitchen cabinets, so the life expectation would be much higher. It'll be very
durable. No, I'm talking about countertops, like, so it doesn't nick, does it? Can I put a hot pot on it? Would it work as a countertop?
Yeah, you could do countertop. Countertops are typically, you know, used in from stone.
Right.
So I'm not saying we can beat the functionality of a stone, you know, the ruggedness, the feel that you get. But yes, it can be used. You could, of course, keep, you know, hot items on top of it. There'll be very less staining if things fall. You can clean it very easily. So it does serve as a good substitute for countertops.
I was thinking of more like the polymer-based countertops like Corian. But I personally like the look. And if there's a person who is looking for a sustainable countertop than something which is mine, then... Our station manager, Viresh, had a question. He asks, what percent of the plastic is there in a piece? Say we take a 1 foot by 1 foot square.
It's all plastic.
What percent would it be?
Well,
what binds it?
Usually done, it's processed at very high temperature and pressure. It all comes together. And, you know, you have to maintain certain compositions so that certain polymers in a certain composition so that they hold all the other materials together.
The waste in itself is an adhesive, so you don't add any more adhesives?
No, we don't use any foreign or any other value-added product.
The recycled products, they lose their properties in terms of their strength and durability. How do you compensate? Is that part of your technology, that you balance the composition to be able to make a product?
Yes. Our idea is to do maximum utilization of all the types of plastic that we get. We don't want to be very choosy with what plastic we get. Otherwise, then, you know, we're part of the same problem, why so much of plastic is not being recycled. So we try to work with a lot of different plastic types. But yes, at a consumer level, we have to deliver a product that works, and it has to be uniform in its properties and in quality. Yes, a lot of effort goes in understanding and, you know, preparing the right quantities of the composition of a raw material batch. So that, I think, is part of our, you know, technology and the effort and the experience that we've built over the years to addressing that challenge.
How old is the company?
We've been operating commercially in production since the last more than 5 years. The product has been around, and, you know, there was a lot of testing, a lot of feedback from the market.
How do you test the strength of the products?
There are a lot of laboratories that do international testing on different parameters. But then again, there is the real-time on-ground testing also, whether the consumers are accepting the product, how the product is going to deliver over a period of time. So that process also is very critical.
So can it be made in any color, or it all has that organic, recycled look?
We don't really try to control the color or the appearance, because it's all different types of plastic, and all plastics that we get are in different colors and different shapes. So what you get is a random mosaic sort of texture. Certain more value addition could be done using primary plastics. You could add a film on top of it, you know, a green color film or a blue color film. You know, when you laminate, that is value addition, and then increases the cost. So of course, value addition could be done. You could also put veneer on top of it, so you get that wood texture or wood feel. And you could also paint on top of it. Painting works very well. Most paints have plastics in them. Our product is also plastic, so it tends to bind very well. So yes, aesthetically speaking, a lot can be done, which in a sense helps us push the product to a wider audience. So acceptability becomes higher.
What is your background? How did you come up with the idea, or how did you talk about your journey?
So the product came into being from a project that wherein we had to address this huge stockpile of plastic waste.
Who's we?
Our company, the co-founder. So my uncle, who is basically the brains behind this product, who started this, I joined in eventually. Basically, we had a project wherein we had to address that problem of plastic scrap coming out of this huge, you know, industrial facility, and whether we could create a product that would generate some value. So that's how it all started. Once my uncle did that, we realized that there could be, you know, so many other plastics that could be utilized. So that's how, you know, our journey began. And then we started playing with more and more plastic types, started creating variants, getting them vetted from laboratories, doing testing in the market. So that's how it all began. And we were really on board with the idea that, you know, there's so much of plastic, good quality plastic. The properties are very good. If you see plastic has very good properties. A lot of plastic that we use is still there, like, you know, your cars, for example, in your household items. So plastic is a durable product, and it's the same plastic that goes in the waste also. So why can't you extract that plastic and again bring it in use and deliver value? So that's where we started thinking, and multi-layer plastic was an obvious choice. Nothing is being done about it. It goes directly to landfill or is incinerated. So that becomes a very important challenge that needs to be addressed.
What is the challenge in handling plastic? You have this balance of using heat and different ways to compress the material to be made into the forms. There will be some emissions which come out of it, right? How do you tackle and manage all that?
So we're not burning any plastic. We're only reaching to a point wherein, you know, it can be worked with. There are no emissions. In fact, our manufacturing is a zero waste discharge certified operation. So, whatever plastic that we bring in, we recycle 100% of it. We don't contaminate any water. We don't contaminate any air, related emissions. The idea is to not create any further pollution. So whatever we get, we recycle.
So the technology, is proprietary? Have you patented it?
We filed a patent for our product, which is still under process. And we're hoping to, get it. And there are so many other products that we have wherein, we've worked with different plastic types in a certain way. We're hoping we would get more patents. But the idea is to spread the message also for people to be more aware that there are avenues that this could be done. And also at a consumer level, that there should be that drive to buy these kind of products. Of course, you need to see how the product is going to perform. That inquiry has to be there.
So would you be willing to mentor other smaller scale setups doing similar things that you do?
We're focusing at the moment with governments doing projects with island
governments
communities.
In India or overseas?
Yeah. So we're hoping to work with the government in India, the local body where our factory is, hopefully very soon. We're also talking to government bodies and few other agencies such as United Nations for doing projects overseas for island communities, for areas where accessibility is not very good. The road infrastructure is poor. Underdeveloped countries where the avenues for expensive recycling technique is not available. We're hoping to work with a lot of these government and non-government agencies.
So how much do you think it is a responsibility of the government via legislation to enforce recycling and reducing plastic and other wastes? And how much is it an overall change in the culture, the attitude of the people?
Well, government plays a very important role. It's a very important stakeholder, rather. They need to facilitate such similar ideas. They need to facilitate companies that are doing such projects. And also, government could be a stakeholder as a consumer. They could encourage use of, such products, eco-friendly products or sustainable building materials. And there are a lot of initiatives, even in India and abroad, where government is pushing for the use of such products. Government is giving subsidies on manufacturing of such products or whoever is in the value chain. So yes, government plays a very important role. And also it is a very important responsibility of big corporates to identify, proper recycling techniques for the plastic that is generated directly or indirectly by them, such as the FMCG industry. They generate so much of plastic. I mean, all of the packaging is in plastic. And a lot of companies manufacture products that are made of plastic. So what happens after the life cycle is over? They may be pushing for newer products on the shelf. And the speed at which they produce these products is very rapid. That means the consumer is going to replace those products very rapidly. So then more and more waste is generated. What is their responsibility to that rapid waste generation? And it's okay, people can use and throw, but as long as it gets properly recycled. So that sort of the whole circular economy argument comes in place. What is the responsibility of large corporates? And a lot of large corporates are taking initiatives, but I think we've got a long way to go.
And you're talking about, say, a tube of toothpaste, which is used and then it comes to you. But I'm thinking many times when they make the toothpaste tube, there is waste, like fresh waste created. Does that get back to you?
Yeah. So that industrial plastic scrap we buy, such similar companies, and we recycle them. But to my understanding, not similar avenues are available in developed countries even. A lot of such plastic, the one you just mentioned, is still going to the landfill and in big quantities. We're able to touch upon a very small percentage of such plastics being produced. The developed countries, the West, as it is, their consumption levels are very high and they don't have any avenue. So it's a much, much bigger problem. And we've interacted with a lot of people overseas in Europe, in America, even in Southeast Asian countries. They see this problem there and they're hoping a solution comes up very quickly.
Yeah, like an average Indian uses about half of the global plastic consumption. But 1/10 compared to a person in the United States.
Absolutely. In US, the way they recycle is also more advanced. Even though they might be producing more, they're collecting in proportions which are effective or may not be effective or more effective than India. It's all right if you're consuming plastic, as long as it is coming from the same batch. You're not pushing new plastic in the environment. There's 5 billion tons of plastic lying around in the environment. Use that.
So you were part of a startup, the WWF startup. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
So WWF has an initiative called the Climate Solver. And in some of the major countries such as India, China, European region, they select one company every year which is being awarded for their innovation, which is contributing to the environment. So we were fortunate enough to be selected and awarded by WWF India. But it doesn't stop with the award. They help us with the entire business processes, with technology, with funding, and directly or indirectly. So they create an ecosystem for us, which is a long partnership. So they work very closely with companies like ours. And they've taken some very exciting projects. Every year they do that. They select a bunch of companies. They identify their core strength and help them grow.
So how does one buy your products? Is it only for commercial purposes, or as a consumer, am I able to buy your products?
Yes, of course. So we're supplying to almost all major cities in India via a dealer network. And we also supply to, big companies or big customers directly. So, and we're hoping to increase our presence in the market with time. So yes, consumers can go talk to our dealers, get the product. Then there's an architect or a carpenter, whoever, pick that material up and execute the desired project.
So it can be sliced and cut?
The product is 100% substitute for plywood. And the working is exactly how you would with a plywood. So for example, cutting or nailing or screwing or, making pieces out of it. The workability is exactly that of plywood. With the difference that, it has very low water absorption. It has less impact from bacteria, termites. So it adds more life. And it is cost effective in a sense. It's cheaper than plywood.
How much cheaper?
Plywood is a range. It's like a car, like you have an expensive car. We are at the entry point of the plywood range. And we're competing with the top range of the plywood.
So in terms of durability, you are probably in the highest range and the waterproof.
Yeah, in some applications where plywood gives away in 2 years, our product is used for 6 years or 8 years at a very low cost. And also the fact that our product is recyclable. So once you're done with using that product, you can sell it back to us. You will recycle it fully. Instead of if it's a wooden piece of furniture, you would burn it as a fuel.
We talked about the panels and what is the acoustic property. So I have a tin roof. It is noisy when it rains. And what about your roofing material?
Our product naturally, dampens sound. If it's raining outside or if it's noise, it tends to dampen the outside noise. Also, with respect to temperature, there is a slight drop inside the house. So if you're using partitions and roofing made from our product, it'll reduce the temperature inside. So it makes it easier for living conditions. So typically, if you're using metal roofing sheets, they absorb a lot of heat. Or even fiber cement roofing sheets, they absorb a lot of heat. For housing purposes, it may not be ideal at all time. And also, if you look at cattle shelters, poultry farms, or food grain storage, or other food items, they require a lot of prevention from moisture and heat and so on. So it works very well in such applications.
What is the impact of China and many of the other countries who have refused to take the waste from the United States?
It's a great impact now with the whole waste management situation. Earlier, a lot of countries would ship all the plastic waste to countries in Asia, China, and so on. Now, all of that plastic is not going anywhere. It remains where it is. And it's being generated at a very fast pace. So those stockpiles are piling up and there are not enough recycling avenues or infrastructure to take care of that problem. So a lot of land is needed. The cost of storing such plastic goes very high. Also, a lot of island countries which were generating plastic and shipping to China or other countries, now they're left with no choice. They don't have any infrastructure. So almost all of the plastic